Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that would walk a mile in Nathan's shoes, fashionable as they sometimes are, just to see something by Paul Thomas Anderson. Unfortunately, good old P.T. didn't produce a feature film in 2019, so we are left with other choices. And for the most part, most choices measured up. That, then, is what this particular show will be about. All our choices for what we thought were the best movies of the past year. And let me begin by saying that, as I have in years past, my particular list doesn't reflect what I thought were the so-called best films of 2019. I'm not quite that arrogant. For one thing, since we all live in Spokane, Washington, we don't get to see many of the films that show up on the national critics' lists. As an example, two of the films that made Manola Dargis's top 10 list, namely Synonyms and One Child Nation, I haven't even heard of. Second, the film that won both Best Dramatic Film and Best Director at Sunday's Golden Globe show, Sam Mendes's World War I saga 1917, didn't even open across the country until this weekend. So for me, at least, my list reflects the 2019 films that I personally liked the best. So where should we go from here?
Well, I want to start off by saying that I've never drawn much of a distinction between best and favorite because I think they're both so subjective anyway. But I mean, that's an argument for another day. But the movies that I would say were my favorite of the year, I would also say, well, then therefore I think they're the best of the year. I mean, I've never really quite understood that, but I kind of understand what you're saying.
But you get my point about haven't seen all the films, so well, how can we say they're
the best? I mean, nobody
has,
if you think about it. Movies come out so thick and fast these days and on so many different corners of the internet. But you're right. I mean, a lot of the New York critics and LA critics see stuff way far in advance, see stuff that most of us will never even have a chance to see
That's
on the big screen. And so, yeah, so it's true. The deck is stacked a little bit in that way. But I think 2019 as a movie year, just as a year itself, it was a bit fraught, I suppose. But as a movie year, I thought it was really good, perhaps a bit backloaded. It seemed like the best movies that we saw in 2019 were kind of in the waning moments of 2019. But throughout the year, there were all of these treasures that would come to the surface. And looking at the three top 10 lists that we have put together here, I think this is the most commonality that we've had in
several years
because I count five movies that we have each put on our top 10 list. Should I just reveal those now and we can talk about them?
Why not? Because I don't think it's any secret. If you just do an internet search, most critics
it's
are
true.
Mentioning these same five movies.
It's true. So these are the five movies that we all came to a consensus on as the best of the year. Martin Scorsese's The Irishman, Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Pedro Almodovar's Pain and Glory, Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story, and Bong Joon-ho's Parasite. Those show up on all three of our top 10 lists. So that means half of the movies on each of our lists are the same. And I think that speaks to a couple of things. I think it speaks to the fact, and like you said, you look at most publications' top 10 lists, you're going to see most of those, if not all of those movies. It shows that there were some really great standout films in 2019. It also speaks to the fact that all of the good ones were – it was kind of like, yeah, those are the good ones. I feel like in years past, there's been more variety in terms of, you know, the picks that all of these major critics are putting out. So I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't know if that's a bad thing. I do like the fact, though, that movies like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Parasite were sort of hits in their own field, that they were critically acclaimed. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, of course, was a little more divisive than Parasite was, and I think for good reason. But those movies actually got people into a theater. Of course, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was a, you know, $150 million blockbuster. Parasite was more of an art house hit. And then you have movies like The Irishman and Marriage Story, which people are able to watch in their living rooms right now. And people were fighting about those movies all over social media, too.
I mean, don't you think that one of the things that these five films have in common is each of them does something a little bit different, a little bit unexpected? Take, for example, The Irishman. Mm-hmm. It's not any sort of a Goodfellas glorification of these mobsters. And then look at Pain and Glory, the Almodovar movie. His movies have always been upbeat and in your face.
And this is much more reflective
nostalgic
and meditative.
And, exactly.
Right.
So, well,
and even Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is unusual for a Tarantino film.
Okay. And what else do these five films have in common? They are directed by some of the best directors, not just working today, but maybe ever. I mean, when you look at this list, if you're looking at Scorsese, Tarantino, Almodovar, Noah Baumbach,
Bong Joon-ho.
I mean, really, what can you say? I mean, so I think those are notable. And quite frankly, if you also look at the other aspect of this, they have some of the best talent mm-hmm. in terms of the actors in these movies. Now, less so in Parasite, we're less familiar, although we've seen at least one of the actors,
sure.
Repeatedly. So I think that there are things that these films have in common. I think that, I mean, Nathan, you talked about what's the difference between favorite films, best films, and I'll at least put this out. You know, I love documentaries. Some of the docs that I liked the best this year that I don't have on my list were women's themed documentaries. I mean, there was Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice. There's Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins. Maiden, about the women who did the Whitbread race. And then Amazing Grace. Now, I didn't have any of those films on my best list or top films. At the same time, these are films that really spoke to me. And I'm not sure necessarily that the production value, that all aspects of these, although Amazing Grace was pretty amazing.
It was.
I'm not sure that I would be able to characterize them as a top or best. But they were films that I really liked and enjoyed.
And let's add that when we reviewed all of those films in the past year on this very show, we all liked them.
Mm-hmm.
We all had good things to say about every one of those, particularly the Aretha Franklin movie.
Yeah, and that came really close to making my top 10 list. I also just kind of thought, well, does this even count as a 2019 film? Because it's sort of this lost film that was reassembled. But I mean, and I went and saw it twice in the theater. So obviously it spoke to
me
pretty strongly.
Well, okay, so another question is, They Shall Not Grow Old. So what year was that in? I didn't even know, I mean, talk about archival and reconstructed and remastered
right.
footage.
You're talking about the World War I documentary
yes.
by Peter Jackson, which actually came back into theaters again this
yes.
Christmas.
Yep.
So it's almost become like a perennial theatrical film. And it came out in the UK long before it ever hit the US.
Mm-hmm.
When we also talk about the kind of in-between limbo of streaming versus theatrical anyway. Sometimes we review movies on the show that we all watch at home on Amazon Prime or Netflix or Hulu. And they
Please
never,
don't watch these on your phone.
No, don't. and they never hit the big screens in Spokane or in most cities around the country for that matter. And we're starting to see that shift towards streaming first. And at some point, we got to figure out, do these belong in the same group as Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or Parasite, even if they are films like The Irishman that are streaming?
That's the big debate going on right now
yeah.
in Hollywood, with the MPAA.
And with the Cannes Film
right.
Festival.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, I do have mixed feelings about that because the experience of seeing a film in a theater is different, in my opinion.
Oh, that's why we went all the way to Seattle to see The Irishman
yeah, we all did.
In the Cinerama,
yeah.
Well,
yes.
We had another reason to go there because we had a friend.
Oh, I didn't. I went specifically to Seattle.
Oh,
okay, never mind.
It wouldn't
never
be the
mind.
First
okay.
time that
no,
we've
no,
driven
right,
to Seattle
right, right.
to see a
okay.
movie.
But I think that's part of the problem. How does it play out differently? And Nathan, you're probably more inclined than the two of us to maybe see it in the theater and then see it, either on your laptop or mm-hmm. On your TV at home.
Yeah, on your Apple Watch.
I do have to say, though, the other night I did go to a movie and right as the lights were coming down, a person came in holding an infant. This was an R-rated horror film that I saw. And I thought, you know what? Maybe watching movies at home all the time isn't that bad after all. Every once in a while, you have an experience that does kind
yeah.
of put you off the very notion of going to the movies. And, of course, for people with families or,
Who are constrained
jobs
from...
that are more strenuous than ours, I suppose, they don't have the time or inclination to go out. So the fact that that they can see all the movies we're going to be talking about here, the fact that you can see them, maybe not first run on Netflix, but a couple months after they hit the theater, you can rent them on iTunes or Amazon. That's really cool, I think.
Well,
it's more accessible.
I do want to give a shout out to AMC because I do think that A-list Stubbs subscription for anyone who sees movies – I mean, of course, you have to get downtown. You have to pay for parking. You have to do all these things. But it's $22. And you can see up to 12 movies.
Right.
And so that's way cheaper than a streaming service.
Absolutely. And theaters like, you know, the Magic Lantern, which is obviously our beloved indie theater here. I mean, they're keeping ticket prices lower than at your regular chain theater. And so they're bringing really interesting films and playing them for a long time. You know, Jojo Rabbit and Parasite are still playing at the Magic Lantern, which gives people the chance to see those
movies on the big screen. Farm played forever.
Yeah.
I never saw the Mushroom movie, so
It's still there, I think.
It's still there.
So, I mean, it's great to me that it's not just – I mean, sometimes the AMC does bring movies to town. They play for 6 days and then they vanish forever. At least the Lantern is giving people a chance to come see stuff.
Oh, yeah. You know, plus the popcorn's great.
It's very good. So we're heading right now to the time in which we're going to have to take
a little off course, I think.
Yes, we do. We're heading to the point where we have to take a break. But I wanted to just go back and look at the five that we talked about. The Irishman by Martin Scorsese, Pain and Glory by Pedro Almodovar, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood by Quentin Tarantino, A Marriage Story by Noah Baumbach, and Parasite by the Korean director Bong Joon-ho. Those are our top five that we in our top 10 list that all three of us agree on. But now it is time to take a break. This is Movies 101. And before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of our show by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to finish our respective lists of the top films that we liked in 2019. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I talked about the films that we rated as the best of what we saw in 2019. And, you know, as a refresher, The Irishman, Pain and Glory, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, A Marriage Story, and Parasite. Now we're going to look at some of the films that maybe each of us liked in one way or another, but some of us didn't like, but they didn't make that top five. It's the second list. So, Mary Pat, why don't you begin with...
Well, I don't know if you'd say it's the second list, because I think if we looked at what our favorite films were of the year, I was a little disappointed that my favorite film did not appear on Nathan's list.
It was like my number 11.
Okay, so,
favorite film of the year, when I thought about it, and it's hard because I saw this really recently, I really want to give a shout out to Little Women, because I went into that movie with great apprehension, thinking this Greta Gerwig's not the director's not going to be able to pull this off despite the A-list talent she has and so forth. And I was so surprised pleasantly by the exuberance of the film, by the celebration of girlhood and sisterhood and womanhood, and I was just pleased with this movie on every level. The acting talent, the directing, the reimagining of the story, but not losing the essence of what Louisa May Alcott was saying. The fact that we've seen this in many incarnations and many of us have read the book and she still pulled this off, I thought was pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think it's a movie that a lot of people will really treasure and come back to again and again and again as sort of like a signpost of whenever it was in their life that they saw it for the first time. I think it feels like that kind of movie, a sort of lived in, just kind of lovely, warm film. And sometimes that's absolutely what you need at that given moment. So, you know, for our fraught times, I love the fact that Little Women is, you know, is doing so well too. It's actually finding an audience, and I really like that. And Greta Gerwig is just one of the best there is. So should I now switch tones completely and talk about my favorite movie of the year?
Yeah, I think you should.
This is the first time in a while where I think my number one film of the year is one that neither of you really liked all that much. You know, it happens from time to time. But my favorite movie of 2019 was Josh and Benny Safdie's Uncut Gems, which we actually just reviewed last week with Little Women. And I was worried that my reaction to this movie had something to do with recency bias, the fact that I came out of that movie and I was just buzzing with the experience of having seen it. That
yeah, maybe that's why I felt similarly pushing. About Little Women.
Yeah, maybe that's why it was kind of pushing its way to the top of my list. So I went back and saw it a second time.
So you saw it even more recently.
Yes. So I went back and saw it again. And the thing that I love about this movie, beyond just the brilliant Adam Sandler performance at the center of it, which is a sentence that I don't get to say all that much, I love the fact that it's a very narrow character study about this one man's descent, and it's a descent of his own making. But it also has just this bustling world of characters around him. And the second time I saw Uncut Gems, what really struck me was that this is a movie that operates both on a cosmic level and a gut level, literally a gut level. I mean, this is a movie that opens with it's out floating in space, and then it goes right into our lead character's colonoscopy.
And you're so like, what?
Which at first I thought was just some kind of visual joke. But upon, you know, reconsideration, this is a movie about a guy who leads with his gut, who his entire livelihood is about what he thinks he can make money betting on. And yet there's this force, this external force that might be supernatural, that might be religious, who knows how to define it, that's pushing him even further. And you could argue that it's a foregone conclusion the whole way, that it's just going to end badly for this guy no matter what. But I just found the filmmaking technique to be electric and exciting. All of the people that the Safdies put in this movie, they were just fascinating to me. So I understand this isn't going to be for everybody, but it was very, very much for me.
Yeah.
And I'm sticking to it. That's my number one movie of the year. In a very strong field of candidates, I must say.
I totally understand your take on it. And if I were your age, I might have liked it also. But I think that I've just reached a point in my life that I don't appreciate and don't care about movies that are just simply about self-destructive characters. I agree with everything you say about the Safdie brothers. I love how they make movies. And I loved the movie Good Time that came out a couple of years ago starring Robert Pattinson, which is basically the same movie. It just has a different kind of plot narrative. But this movie didn't connect with me at all.
Maybe you need to see it again.
About Uncut Gems. No, because
I should have invited you the second time I went back.
Because you'd have to keep me away from sharp implements if I had to see this movie again.
All right. What's your number one, Webster? Let's
hear it. My number one movie of the year is one that is one of those ones that came about in the early part of the year and that a lot of people forgot about. But when I saw it, I went, this is one of the best films I've seen in the last decade. And that's Joe Talbot's The Last Black Man in San Francisco, which was based on a story that he came up with Jimmy Falls, the actor, and it's basically kind of Jimmy Falls' life to a certain extent. But Joe Talbot and Rob Richard took the idea that Jimmy Falls had, and then they went with it and made this really affecting, poignant look at a man in San Francisco who believes this house, you know, he thinks that it's his family house, and he goes and he fixes the house up when the owners keep telling him, stay away, stay away, stay away. And then when they give the house up, he goes and he squatters rights. He takes it over. I thought it was a wonderful look at a lost part of the city, of misplaced nostalgia, of life on the streets, of poverty, of hope and desperation. And The Last Black Man in San Francisco, to me, is by far, well, maybe not by far, because it was a pretty good year. But it touched me more than any other film that I saw in 2019.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. It's in my all-sarans as well. I really liked it. And I'm excited to see where Joe Talbot goes next, because it's one of those movies by a first-time filmmaker where you look at it and you go, oh, this person has a vision, and I'm seeing it right now. And that's pretty exciting. I won't quarrel with that like you quarreled with my number one.
Ooh. Well, I have two docs on my list that did not get on either of your radar. And those two are American Factory. And the second is Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened. And that's the Netflix doc. And we've had an ongoing discussion about Netflix. Does it qualify only if it's in the theater too or whatever? But for whatever reason, I still remember scenes from Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened. because you sit there, there's this huge fraud being perpetuated, but you're not sure if it's a fraud. And there are just some characters who show up in this particular doc that I will remember forever.
As we said at the time, the best way is to watch the Hulu and then the Netflix film back to back, because then you get the complete story or a more complete story.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's about the guy who wanted to pull off the greatest festival, a high end.
In the Bahamas someplace.
Yeah.
Right?
And McFarlane, the guy's name, who he appears more in the Hulu doc.
Right. And he's an actual talking head in the Hulu doc.
And the other film that's on my list is American Factory, which is a documentary about a GM glass plant that closes down in Ohio. It's bought by a Chinese corporation. And then they try to meld the workplaces with these workers who have come over from China and the Ohioans who comprise the workforce, who've been hired back. And it is a culture clash. It's about America. It's about capitalism. It's about so many different things, and I really did appreciate that film.
And speaking of China, I want to call out two movies from this year that show up in various places on all of our lists. One would be Lulu Wang's The Farewell, which just won a Golden Globe.
Aquafina, right.
It's such a wonderful movie that is playing around with tone and with cultural differences, and it's just such a touching, perceptive film. And also Ashes Purest White, film about China by Xie Zhengke, which is about contemporary China and the traditions of China at the same time, told through the lens of this gangster story, this kind of troubled romance between a woman and the gangster she loves, and how both of them have to find independence, and China's finding independence as well while all of this is happening. A great epic film.
Absolutely. And I want to say that Ashes Purest White is along with Little Women, is on my top 10 list, along with, I want to say, Diane, Kent Jones's poignant story that stars Mary Kay Place as a woman facing her elder years, looking back at her life. It's just a wonderful little evocative film.
I guess I would have to give a shout out to Booksmart.
Booksmart, yes. Also. But also A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, the Tom Hanks look at Mr. Rogers, Mr. Fred Rogers.
And another movie that's on my list that none of you mentioned, neither of you mentioned, is The Lighthouse, the Robert Eggers film, which I think is just a piece of genius.
I had that twinned with Midsommar as the painful films that I appreciated. But
if both of you are going to mention that, I'm going to mention Gaspar Noé's Climax, insane film of 2019.
I love that you brought up Climax. And what a way to end this show.
Exactly. And it's time to go. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And early in the show, Nathan Weinbend and Mary Pat Truthart and I discussed our reactions to the year of 2019 in film. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you, too, our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again try to separate cinema wheat from cinema chaff. Until then, remember these words from filmmaker Greta Gerwig on directing movies. It's a reverse magic show. It's so much time and weight and money and people, and you're taking all this stuff and you're reducing it to flickering light, making it disappear into a dream. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.